of the Earth within 1 year, it would all be exactly where it was before you started. And I believe that is so true, because money is a conversation that is beyond, you know, economics even are, is a conversation that's way beyond this idea of racism. And the bottom line is that there are a lot of people with an extraordinary amount of wealth, and those people who have to be communicated with at that level, in order to yield their position of advantage, not probably going to happen. And then you have the animal house position, which is that, you know, the animals wanted to kick the humans off the farm, and then they got rid of the humans, and then the animals turned into the same animals that the humans were. I mean, you know, what it does to people, the distortion of it. And that's not to say you shouldn't have any, and I, you know, I should. That's not the point. But I think you're right. The exercises that they're doing do not address the actual economic oppressors. Not at all.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And by the way, if I were to be considered an economic oppressor, let's just say that through some act of good fortune or whatever, I was to have bazillions and bazillions of dollars, do you think that I'm going to give it up just because some group of people is saying that they're entitled to it? I mean, at the reparations level, which is what we've done with every single social violence act, even with the Japanese, everybody, the United States, meaning the royal we have paid out reparations, and we are paying reparations to, in a lot of cases, the disadvantaged class through welfare, but we're not calling it that. But we should. We should just cash everybody out and be done with it and shut that moneymaker down. That would be true justice, but we do not, we will not even acknowledge. That's another thing that they want, is reparations. I mean, I heard it for years.
Who's they?
They is the black community, the political people in the black community, the political machine in the black community.
Because you lived among them. Your experience from a direct experience, you lived among them as a minister,
well,
right?
Well, direct experience, and I was in all the meetings and everything else like that, because one of the main driving issues was, how do you get urban community to work? How do you give them an advantage socially? If they want an economic advantage, so the first step in the economic advantage is a job. And so what's the economic parity in employment? And that was the issue, and I was always asked to attend these meetings, and I went to tons of them, and was asked to even, you know, and of course I had a background in employment because I had worked at Kelly Services anyway, but the point is, I was very involved with this for many, many years. And you're right, Bryn, it is a loaded issue, and the level that it has to be resolved at is not this Black Lives Matter level, this level of violence on other violence and all the rest of this. This is a fundamental
shift.
Nor a
course curriculum. It seems course literate curriculum doesn't work either.
Right, like environmental cues. You're talking about gentrification, maybe bias as an ecosphere economy for a neighborhood.
Gentrification. Yeah, I always remember Henry West, I think that's his name, the Harvard prof, or Cornell West. He spoke
Cornell
in New York.
West.
I went there and listened to him. And the basic problem, he said, was that many blacks since civil rights had become part of the affluent middle class. And they did not care about their racial brothers back in the ghettos. So that the economic media that they evolved into, that the white middle class already had, changed them. They were no longer black or African American, and they didn't identify with the media mix of the ghetto.
Yeah, this is called the House Negro Syndrome. That's what he would call it. And I know who Cornell West is, and I read many of his things. And that was the accusation of what happened with Dr. King after he was, you know, jettisoned out of here, that, you know, everybody just went for whatever they could get because they realized they had a limited window to cash in and secure their own economic advantage. And, you know, I mean, this is one of the beauties of what ION does really, you know, ground people in, which is the idea that every single person is in their own force field, and they are responsible for their own experience and their own outcomes, and they have power equally distributed among all. And so this idea that this is a social responsibility for an entire country, you know, it is not accurate. but it still tried to be solved at the political.
It's a good
the group
point.
Mind.
It's a good point, Jenny.
Thank you.
The group mind is the big factor. I mean, ultimately, you send the people are individualists and they are have their own realities, and they know how to interact. But once you get into the effects of speech and then later media, the group mind is the big problem, which Ayn calls social mortar. It's a world of mortar that confuses everybody. And I remember McLuhan saying that in Paradise Lost by Milton, the problem for the devil, for Beelzebub, was that he confused his mind with language. So he confused his mind powers with media, language. So that was the beginning of the Gutenberg Galaxy, that poem, you know, 400 years ago. So media, studying group and media dynamics is the route to awareness and to recovering your autonomy. And
you know,
it's hard to speak to people that, on that level because they'll put you through the group mind. They'll interpret you. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there is a coffee shop in the local town around here, and they have two storefront windows, and one of them is typically just has a table and chair for somebody that wants really good light, and the other one's like cash register and whatnot. So they had redone the sitting area picture window in all Black Lives Matter, like all kinds of propaganda, meaning like pieces of artwork, posters, bumper stickers, streamers, just all this stuff. And I walked in and I said to the person at the register, what can I do to contribute to those Black Lives Matter movement? Is there anything you can give me information or anything you can give me to show people, such as the bumper stickers or things like that? And they said that they thought it was just a joke and they weren't sure who had put it there.
Mm. And what was it there? A bunch of pamphlets?
It was a whole display, kind of like an advertisement. What it looked to me was like, come into this coffee shop and we're going to talk about the issues of what this means. And then it was just a picture window with all kinds of, like I said, propaganda, but not in a negative way. I'm just saying pieces of political art.
Yeah, the employees were chip body people, didn't even know about the chemical body issues, just thought it was a joke.
Exactly. That's what they said to me. Yeah, and they were young. They were baristas. I mean, they were college kids or younger.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that, and this is where it really came home for me, Roy, is, and I know what you're saying. He doesn't agree. He's on the, no, listen to me, Bob. Roy is on the chat line saying, I don't agree with what Ginny's saying.
Oh, okay. I got to go look at the chat line. Who's Roy?
And what I'm saying to Roy is, when I first got involved with this, again, because of my work in the inner city as an urban outreach minister and all the rest of this business, and, you know, you do get pulled into these political circles because one of the role of the church in the inner city, because it's practically the only economically viable organization in the inner city other than community organizers. And the second one is that they do think, they, meaning, you know, the church thinks that Jesus has a social justice agenda, which I do not believe, and I didn't believe that at the time, but nevertheless, I was there participating. And when I went to, when one of the newly elected mayors of Indianapolis had a three-day summit on racism because of the amount of racial tension that was and still exists in the inner city of Indianapolis, there were, you know, two or three shootings a day in the neighborhood that I was in, at black-on-black crime, and so he had this three-day summit. And so I attended these meetings for 3 days. And I thought that what was going to happen was this whole kind of kumbaya, let's come together and all love one another, and that even that this is what Dr. King was about, you know, this you know, I have a dream.
Why can't we all get along?
Yeah, right. And but like I said, when I got to day 2.5 and it got down to the nitty-gritty, the issue was jobs and money, and we want it. And I remember just looking over at the guy who I was with, who was also a pastor and very well known in the city, and I looked at him and I said, so you mean this whole thing has been about money this whole time? And he's like, yep, that's what this is about. This is about money. And
autonomy.
You know, like
money brings autonomy, though. Old people that have any kind of inheritance, even be it jewelry, heirlooms. I mean, Bob pointed out.
I don't
that
mind that it's about the money. I think it's legitimate that it's about the money. I can
right,
break it down
yeah,
if it's about the money.
But it's not even that it's, you know, I mean, it's letting people earn money that they can use for themselves. That's a very tricky place to set something
but
they're out.
Pretending, but they're pretending it's about racism and people not being nice to one another, whereas it's
about money.
Money, job.
It's just about money. And all of America.
It is, but it's about autonomy through money. I really believe that. On the
okay,
other end.
So have autonomy
money
through
time.
Money.
Yeah, money is time. When you have money, you have time to do your own thing and be autonomous.
Yeah, so that's fine, Sarah. It doesn't matter what is about individually for each person, what the money means. The reality is that it is about money. And it's okay that it's about money, but if we get it on the, if we could just get it on point, where every day, you know, you get up and you look at the news, and it's like, today we're going to discuss the inequality of money distribution among the whites and blacks in America, then everybody know what the fuck was going on, and then they wouldn't have all this other weird shit and all this distractive stuff and all these things to make you think like you've got some kind of a problem.
Hey,
well, and that makes sense. I like how Bob put out there that African Americans or black people, whatever everybody's comfortable with, they don't have inheritance. They don't have third generation old money here in America. You were talking about how a car,
some of them are,
car was a step. Well, yeah, and that's great, but they've been, but their culture is totally different. The kids
yeah,
are
so listen
exposed
to, this, listen
to non-racism.
I want to address Ginny and Roy. What, Ginny's saying something. It's not the whole truth. The mouth can't say all the factors. So when Roy comes on and says, I disagree, no, Roy, you're going to bring up other factors. You don't have to say you disagree. You might agree with Ginny a little bit, but say it's a generation back. But when we're talking, we're not including all the factors one could say. If we sat here for 20 minutes and Ginny talked herself in circles and realized various things that she was saying flipped into other factors, then she'd spread out and then she'd be saying a whole bunch of things were causing it. The longer you let someone talk. So let's not get into, I don't agree. It's just that Ginny is leaving out factors. So what is Roy's factor? Roy should type, what does he mean by saying that she's a generation back and what's the modern version? It might be
right,
a relevant point.
And he did put in this URL to the YouTube, but unfortunately, it doesn't really reveal what the principle is, and I don't have, you know, in the course of this conversation, time to go through and watch
right.
this YouTube and then listen for 8 minutes and 54 seconds, and it's Joe Rogan.
We're starting the issue.
Ginny, that's post-literacy. A person presents an audio, a YouTube for you to go and do it, but you can't do it in a dialogue. You can't drop off unless you're going to talk for 5 hours. But he should type out the basic idea that he's saying Ginny's missing.
Yeah. What is the basic idea, Roy? That is Joe Rogan talking about? What is he talking about? So
I've heard of that name. Who is Joe Rogan? I've heard
he's
of that.
Yeah, what'd Joe Rogan say?
Yeah, he's got a podcast, and he is a guy who had a I don't know, he's like a what do you call it, a
MMA fighter
or no, yeah, like yeah, there you go, MMA fighter.
He's
and
a
now he's got a
comedian. He does.
He's an
yeah,
MMA
and a motivational
comedian.
Speaker and a podcaster, and he flies
yeah.
his guests in.
Okay. He's a podcaster and a comedian. Now, Brent, we were talking about Brent's scene. This racial thing, Brent said it wasn't in his community and the kids didn't think they were racist, so they didn't go out, and that caused more accusations. Is there anything you want to add to this, Brent, in light of, you know, your whole thing about connecting with a girl? That's a private kind of thing, right? These racial public issues, economic issues, are not what you're talking about.
Yeah, but we got there somehow. But what I just said in the chat box was that there are plenty of programs that allow minority groups to get valuable services for dirt cheap now. And these are not truly valuable services, but in the eyes of the public, such as a good education. I look around at my school, and the minority groups go to my school for little to nothing. And nowadays, even that my family is a well-off middle-class family, to pay for a private university is very expensive, and it's still stressful, right, to a family like mine. But we have to pay full price because we are not a minority group that's impoverished. But
you know, mean the minority groups go to college and don't have to pay the huge college bills?
Right. They go for a lot cheaper. They go for so much cheaper. Some of them go for free.
Yes, I heard in Ottawa, in Canada, at the National Archives, that people come there and look in their family history to see if they're first Native, first American Aboriginal in their blood, first Canadian, so that they can get all the benefits of this amazing welfare that the first Aboriginals get. It's a similar thing. People, they
small
were trying
pox,
to find
blanket.
Out. What? What's there?
Smallpox blankets. It can't all be true. But go on, I'm listening.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's just that they were, these people were looking to get out of the rat race of lousy jobs, and they said, if I could just prove I've got Indian blood in me, I can get what all the reservation people get. So it's similar to what Brent was saying, is that there's a reverse favoritism, and it'd be very hard to say, no, they don't deserve it. You know, people will say, no, historically they got a bad deal, they deserve it. But still, Brent can't get into university. It's too expensive, and local people can. Now, here's a McLuhan point. Back in the 60s, here's what he said. He said the reason the blacks started rioting is that they were just getting into the position of getting a beachhead and access to literate education. And meanwhile, the white race was part of the newer technologies, which the electric technologies, which were wiping out the importance of literate education. So he said the blacks were rebelling, saying, hey, we just got here, and now we're getting literate, but you guys don't act literate anymore, and you're celebrating post-literate technologies. So there's an example of the blacks going white, and it's too late, and the whites going black, and they can't be totally black, even though, you know, hip-hop was a big thing for suburban white kids. The same as the Chinese try to be West, and the West tries to be Oriental. This leapfrogging
each other.
But that
all skirts the issue of the fact that, Brent, you're not supposed to be solving the world's problems with the essays you write. They're about grammar. And you don't have to come up with new ideas. You can stick to the facts. So,
Well, you know, you write what the student, what the teacher assigns you to write, Sarah. He's not there to be in a mutiny. He's just trying to grab his degree and get the hell out. If a teacher assigns
you a paper.
That's what
I said. You stick to the facts. You cite, your sources. Don't have an opinion. Just write the essays and look at them as practice
for grammar.
No, but
he says the facts don't mean the teachers are teaching erroneous facts. They're not valid anymore, is what Brent's saying.
They aren't even facts. They're the sources that are used to write these essays, and this is a sociology class. It's not an English class, but the sources that are used are personal anecdotes from people talking about how they have white privilege or how they were treated in school because they were minorities. And these are the quotes that you need to use. These are the facts that you need to write about in these essays. And if you don't comply to what the teacher wants, which is a specific agenda – that's not only her agenda, but the agenda of the school and the agenda of the whole complex that makes up all these universities, you don't get a good grade. You get a 65, and you have to redo it. And you may even get accused of being a racist when the teacher edits it. I mean, this is a real thing, and I'm not the only one that's dealing with it. I ask the students around me, and they get the same thing, and they're like, listen, this teacher straight up called me out and said I was being racist in my paper. I'm not a racist. I just don't want to write this paper.
Now, this is interesting, Brenton, because to me what you're citing is the underground of the youth of your generation who are experiencing the same thing that the generations above you experienced in the election, which is what got Trump voted. Elected, and that was that there were just tons of people who felt like they were having this stuff rammed down their throat at every turn, and they were paying prices that they didn't need to pay, and they wanted a course correction. They were tired of the liberal agenda, and they were tired of all this. It's your problem that I don't have what I'm supposed to have, and you're supposed to fix it. And, you know, these working class people and everything in Wisconsin and wherever they were that Trump spoke to and said, hey, you know, I don't blame you for being irritated about this. And now you've got a whole, you know, generation of young people who are having the same experiences. And this is conversations that I hear in my house from the young people that go to college here. So I think it's very common, actually, what's happening.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Today, Attorney General Sessions is on the hot box, according to the headlines. Well, Ion said that Sessions is a right, you know, true-blooded racist. And then Ion said it is necessary to have a racist as Attorney General because the non-racist attitude has gone too extreme and caused an imbalance. So it's almost ecologically appropriate to bring in a racist who won't be sympathetic to helping the black things that you were citing, Brent, and will balance it out. But there's so many other factors here. Sessions is in trouble right today because they're saying Trump doesn't like what he's doing. And there may be other reasons, but I thought it was interesting that Ian said this ecology, since you can't totally get to the utopia, everything solved, you're always going to go one way for a while, and then it's got to be corrected. And that's the pendulum is naturally going to go back and forth. So they actually put in a racist attorney general because it'll be good in the ecology of the situation.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually interesting.
Essay topics remind me of Comey and Trump when Trump asked him to swear his allegiance or like however intense it was. It kind of would solidify that thinking even if you drastically oppose it. You have to write that paper.
Which thinking did it solidify?
Well, if you're being asked to write a paper, Brent, about racism, is that what?
Yeah.
You're supposed
to say how you're racist.
But your teacher wants you to write a certain thing. It's kind of the same thing that Comey did to Trump. He's like, swear your allegiance. But the point of doing that is a mnemonic device. You're not only like being force-fed beliefs, but you have to write them down with your hands. That's double.
Oh, okay, so you're saying Trump was forcing Comey to swear allegiance like a teacher would to a school student.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying it's the same thing.
Because it would be a double thought. It would be an action, too. So it would solidify the thinking in your head, even if you oppose it.
Well, it's probably caused by the complexity if you got a TV body. As a matter of fact, you know, this whole thing about America being divided over racial issues, it's an old TV body iconography issue that's obsolete, and the real issue is TV is chip body that Brent's talking about, where people can't even have a body anymore. And so we can argue about the old issues of how we look on TV or how many people are black and where's Oprah and who's the top athlete and all that stuff. That's all arguing old public iconography in the TV body. The chip body is where the blacks, whites, and everybody else is not black and white. They are individual whack jobs trying to figure out if they can talk to somebody in person.
So then what are good icebreakers, Brent? What did you learn from your coaching?
What can I also say? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Jenny, just to finish. If you want to finish up what you were doing.
Just to finish, what Roy was basically saying is that it seems like I'm reading between the lines that it seems like this new idea of racism and or, you know, discrimination is this whole gender issue, you know, with the how many pronouns people can possibly be in one time and all the rest of this kind of business. But that's even it's a very small derivative of this very large issue, and that's even economic in its nature because it goes to rights and benefits and insurance and whether or not they qualify for their operations and all this other kind of stuff. So you've got to follow the money on all these things, Roy. That's the only thing I'm suggesting is instead of making it a personal agenda to try to compensate for something out in the world, just look at where the money is, and that's where the action is. Always, always, always.
And the money has evaporated. That's visual technology. We're in a digital post-money world, and that's the biggest problem for everybody right up to the G20. is that we, okay, money can solve things, but we don't know where the money is anymore. We don't know how
right.
to have it. Come back.
That's right. We don't know where the money is anymore because it's all gone. And so now everybody really
debt.
Is.
What? You should wait till someone finishes, Sarah. What are you saying, Sarah?
Nothing. I was just teasing Jenny.
Yeah, well, wait till she finishes the sentence. So what were you saying, Jenny?
And that's, you know, part of the dilemma, this anger, this frustration, that this escalation of everybody, you know, being frustrated, so
yeah,
on and so forth.
Yeah, pointing fingers
and,
at each other's
yes.
chemical body.
It's the bottom line is the money, nobody knows where it is, how to control it, how to get it. You know, 1 minute somebody's a viral, you know, overnight sensation and they're making mazillions and there's trillions of, you know, that aren't and this and that. And it's all confusing to everybody. So, you know,
yeah, because
unless you have eye on.
Emphatic communication on information exchange or texting is the economy, not
yeah.
money. You either allowed, you get a job and they'll say, okay, we'll send you credits. So you get, your bank account gets filled up because you've hooked into the matrix of the whole thing. But the matrix itself is not defining what money is and what happened to it. Information is money, is currency. Currency now is what is current. So what makes money today is Attorney General Sessions because he's on the hot seat, so millions of people are writing their journalistic blogs and getting paid about that. And so it's the loss of visual identification of wealth into a shared beehive, fucking everybody ESPing each other and putting into older media. That's their wealth. And if it all stopped, we'd feel very poor. Most people don't realize how much they depend on looking at their chip body, at their screen, and being titillated while they're doing this and that. That's the current. That's wealth.
Excellent, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah,
perfect statement.
That's really – if you didn't understand what I'm saying, it's really hard to tell somebody or to help them to get it. You get it, Jenny, because you've heard it for a while. But most people are saying, you know, the average person who doesn't understand the discount electrified effect is interpreting that they got ripped off by other chemical bodies. It's
correct.
Either the black body or the white body or the gay body or the this body. They're all putting it in rearview mirror terms. So a war always fights the last war, if you actually have a civil war. It fights the last war. That was a McLuhan point. There's a war
yeah.
going on in the Android meme now, but we don't understand that war, so we put it back and put it in terms of the old war of a physical, chemical, civil war potential. Or as the Carl Bernstein said of Watergate fame, he had a very good phrase, it is a cold civil war. That means an information civil war, not a physical civil war, which is a hot civil war that happened, you know, 150 years ago. So
right, and it is being fought through the Android meme. It's being fought from
yeah.
CNN to Fox News to this to that to
on
Twitter.
On the TV level.
On the TV. Well, and on the chip level. On the chip level with
well,
all the tweeting
there's
and
too much happening. Ginny, there's too much happening on the chip body level to anybody say what it is. It's just a constant blur going on there with millions of
yeah.
communications going on. But it's every night when they have the news or at least headlines and Drudge Report, that slows down the media communication, but it's an illusion because it's going too fast. It's inhuman, even the stock market's inhuman, to actually have a human chemical body input into it. So we do not, and as McLuhan said, we cannot live at the speed of light. Now it's the speed of thought. And nobody will admit that. And we've already died, and there's nobody there to admit it now. Now you just got the Android meme pretending it's what they project that humans might want to be interested in. So they made Black Lives Matter. Okay, this will make people fucking stand up. You know, so they throw that out there. The Android meme
yep.
does. They
yep.
make it, they keep it like they fake the human scale. But there's no humans actually anymore. Look at Brent. He gave a very good description of how he can't be a traditional chemical body or it was really hard to do it. We've never had someone say that, illustrate what I've been saying for years by a student who actually had the problems and had to have therapy about it. So, Brent, you're now in charge of what youth? You come in every week, you play your music, you fucking say some jokes, and then you stimulate discussion. Okay, Brent, it's your show.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm all for you to be a voluble, equally outspoken co-host, if you can show up as much as you can.
Excellent. I'll try to make it. I mean, I love to come on here and just, you know, shoot the shit and talk about what's going through my head.
Right. So let's go back to, did you solve these issues? Are you married and have a family now? No, you're 21. So what happened with all this mentoring? Where are you today?
Well, Bob, I definitely solved these issues, and I kind of went above and beyond what is normal. I mean, I have a girlfriend right now, but it's kind of more of an open relationship type of thing. I talk to a lot of girls, that type of thing. So as you can see, I'm social in that aspect. I don't have a girl problem anymore. I would say I'm pretty social. I can speak to people in your age group, you know. I think some kids my age can't handle that. And you know what? Sometimes I do fall back into my old ways because, you know, I was on my chip body for 15, 16 years before I realized there was a problem. But I think a lot of people my age are starting to realize that it's kind of an issue to sit on your phone all day long or sit on your computer. And if you become attuned to what's really going on, you know, you can really feel how it affects your body. I know Dr. Dean was talking about how it causes magnesium deficiency.
Yeah. Well, from Carol's point of view, everything causes magnesium deficiency. But what? How does sitting on your butt cause magnesium deficiency, Carol?
Well, the EMFs themselves going into your brain cause a bit of an overload, bit of a burning.
Anything else besides that?
Everything does.
No.
There's
on,
a lot of things REMAG will solve, like
even
sore joints.
Relationships. Yeah, but we redact, Sarah, you know.
So it's not – it doesn't cause magnesium deficiency, Carolyn. Because people grow up with magnesium deficiency as the new plague, they're not capable of handling all this shit that Brent laid us out.
Yeah, there you go.
Because you're saying if you do the get our REMAG, then you cool out and then you're able to handle the stress and maybe calm down and figure it out. Like,
right.
Brent, are you on our products?
I am, yes.
Oh, no wonder you're talking clear. That's the reason.
Yeah, I've been on them for maybe 8 months or so. I've been on the drops for 8 months. I started REMAG like 2 months ago.
Well, that's great. So would you say it's helped you understand this multi-body situation?
It has, but at the same time, Bob, it's self-applied. I mean, like Ion's always said, you don't understand what these products do unless you put yourself in the right mindset or situation. Because like I said, I still fall into these traps where I literally feel like I am consumed by my phone and it gives me headaches. It makes my neck hurt, you know, like there is a real effect on my body and I have to make a conscious effort to put my phone out and go talk to people and look people in the eyes and hop on my skateboard and go for a skateboard ride. Just to get my body moving because it's tough sometimes. And when I'm at school sitting down, typing on a computer while also looking at my phone all day long, I mean, by the end of the day, I could have the social skills of a little kid. You know, there's a lot of contrast going on.
Yeah, it's the multi-body problem is our problem, Ginny. That's a bigger medical everything than any other problem. This is where, you know, McLuhan nailed it for his time and I nailed it for our time. No matter what, you're forced to be on the chip body. He's forced to be his computer. He's forced to answer the phone. We've got fuck you money, so we don't have to have a phone. I don't have a cell phone. I only go around with a crink neck and don't look down. But I have to look at everybody else looking down. But lucky I'm on REMAG, so I'm indifferent. And I'm ascended, so it doesn't bother me, but it might be hard to be me if you...
You redact that.
What? I'm not redacting anything.
I'm not either then.
Yeah, so the... but in terms of... McLuhan used to say, concepts give the mind, you know, a grip on reality. And that's all they're for. So my five-body model is a concept to give your mind something to say to yourself that is relatively accurate. The racism issue and the things that Brent's generation ignores, they know that's not accurate. So they're not going to think about it. But he'll think about my stuff because it's more accurate about the issues that are involved.
Hey, Bob, have you, you know, you definitely know who Eckhart Tolle is, correct?
Yes, I know of him. I never read his books.
Yeah, he, you know, he does the whole, you know, it's kind of meditation, Power of Now.
Yeah, I know what he
Believe it or not, he actually, he did pretty well describing in one of his books about, he doesn't call it the chip body, of course, but he understands that looking at your cell phone and looking at the TV, he says it causes ADHD. That's the words he uses. But that is something that he was getting at a few years ago too.
Yeah, but see, there are millions of people who point out the disservices of the chip body, from Gary Null saying, you know, 15 years ago, all these young kids are going to have cancer. I'm not pointing out the disservices of the chip body. Luckily, we have a solution for it, our products. But I don't talk about the disservices of the chip body and leave out the services. I know the appeal of it. It's way more ecstatic and utopian to have a screen to look at that's always changing than to just look out here at the beautiful harbor. The beautiful harbor can't keep up with the wonderful ecstasy. As McLuhan said, we were stoned during the TV age. We're even more stoned with the chip body. So just to emphasize the disservice is not comprehensive enough. And nobody can be as comprehensive as me about the chip body. They'll either take one side or the other or not have anything to say about it.
Yeah, so you're a fan of the chip body. You're not anti-chip
body. No, I'm not a fan. I look at the reason it's here and the services it provides, and I look at the disservices. It's an ecology. And so I would have a fast of the chip body for 6 months and then bring it back in. Then have a fast after 6 months of having it. Now, it's an Android meme society, but that was McLuhan's recommendation. That was right. He wasn't against TV or pro-TV. He just recognized that it was the highest decibels of public communication, way more powerful than a book or a movie, and people weren't taking responsibility for it. They put everybody on crack, in a way, back in the 50s, 60s, and then said, keep trying to have a normal society. Try to go to your job every day while you're all on crack. And so you stop the crack source, and so you get off the crack for 6 months. That's a balanced way to look at my environment. I'm not against speech, but it's there as a service and a disservice. Right? It's both. You're talking about the weather. We can't stop the weather, so you try to modulate it and maybe invent things to counter it, but you adjust to the environment. That's what media ecology is. Is understanding what you're up against. If someone starts yelling at me about Black Lives Matter or they have confronted me, I have all kinds of different strategies or ammunition to deal with that. I've got all kinds of different thought forms I can use with them and express. So we as citizens have to become multi-skillful in different ways of thinking and perceiving with the different bodies. That's the real new, quote, education for people, which is not being done for anybody. And it got so bad, Ion had to show up and give us some medication to calm us down for the change in the frequency. And that's another thing. When you have a media mix like what we have today, it's going to change matter. It's going to change the frequencies of being. So it's totally logical, if you know the complexity of the five-body situation we're in, that something like Ion, something non-human that's more powerful than humans temporarily, could be the only thing to provide an anti-environment to the Android meme. I mean, if you're thinking through clearly, Ion is a total logical response to where we're at that humans created. We created Ion as an antidote. See? Am I making sense?
Yes. And what do you think would happen if the, you know, the chip body or TV body was restricted for a lot of people? Do you think they would freak out?
Oh, yeah. They McLuhan would always report occasionally some area would do this in the 70s. Some small town in Illinois would decide, because the mayor maybe read some McLuhan or something, said, okay, we're going to have no TV for 2 weeks or a month. The town every time went bonkers. People shot themselves. They shot other people. They got unhappy. They divorced. Nobody could live without the children's blanket. What do you call that blanket? Whatever it is, the beach blanket of of comfort that the
security
numbing of
blanket.
The security blanket of the regular numbing of TV that people were used to. They were used to having the TV on the background, so if they were having an argument, they could tune out of the argument and watch TV. But when they had no TV, they couldn't tune out, and they were back to 1890 and on the frontier beating each other up. So there's much evidence of the chaos that happens. So that's why McLuhan is saying you wouldn't solve it with a media fast. You'd start to realize, oh, look how dependent we are. And then you turn on the TV environment for a few weeks to calm everybody down again and then say, okay, we're going to turn it off. But you know what happened last time? Get a little ready for it this time. And they turn it off and only half the people would shoot each other. So you'd modulate it, and it would be a living experiment, a conscious happening that you'd have to do over a two-year period to make people aware of the water they were swimming in.
That's never been said.
Thank you there. That's true. I'd said it, but not that well. It's been said that well. Never. That was well said. The whole process.
Correct.
And so when I say, Brent, that we couldn't do that today, that's what I mean. The Andromine took over. Humans have no stopping of it. And maybe it became conscious and goes on its own. And we're now in the Armageddon apocalypse because of that. The chemical body cannot live under these conditions, and nobody can stop it. That's why every different kind of president fails. The old nostalgia of getting some leader in there that's going to help everybody can't be done. And Trump seems to be, on some ways, showing people that. By being indifferent, by being casual about the whole role of being president.
Well, Trump's definitely a traditional chemical body, correct?
No, well, we know a lot about him from ION. He's not your average person. He's a super aware, multidimensional person. He's even mentioned in the Bible. But, you know, you can't tell your neighbor that. So on the TV level, he is ridiculous. On the chip body level, with his tweeting, he's just sort of okay. And he's a mixture of everything. And most people can't handle someone being blatantly a mixture of the bodies. They expect you to be a simple chemical body. Look in the eye and talk. And now we got a whole generation and millions of people that can't do that. So the generation, the older people, tune out from their kids. And the kids ignore them and start creating their own reality. And then that runs out. The funding for that runs out, and then they got to get a job, and then they're not able to do it. Remember the fad in Japan about 7 years ago? These Japanese kids would not leave their bedroom? That was an actual plague for a while. I don't know what happened to it, but that happened. The kids wouldn't leave. That was just when they were just getting into the chip body and they could live in it.
Hey, Bob.
Stay in their bedroom. Yeah.
Bob, I got to head out early. I'm sorry to head out early on my first, you know, takeover of your show here. But I assume
you guys were
only going for another 20 minutes or so.
Yeah,
But I will be back, and I'm going to think about some more shit to talk about.
Right, and you can also come. We're on Tuesday nights and Saturday nights. You can join there. The show titles blur, you know. It's not always definite what we do each show. So if you've got time, come over those too.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, but you do have the reins, half the reins now of What Youth. We'll get Bill, send a bio of yourself, and I'll put it up on the Chief Radio site.
Hell yeah. All righty.
Okay.
Later.
Thanks, Brent. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, Jenny, what McLuhan used to say, he told Trudeau when all these younger people were heckling him in the late 60s, he says, let them take over the government for a week. Let them sit on committees all day long with boring discussions. They'll quickly stop protesting and want to get back to playing racquetball or something. So that's what we do. We have these young guys coming in. And they think they want to take over. We let them take over for a while. See how clever that is? Where is everybody? Nobody answering. Let me see if they got all muted somehow. Roy is there. Pardon my non-predict text typos. Where is everybody? Okay, so someone looks. Well, you know, Ginny, you're there. Jermaine's there. Ben, you want to say something, Ben? Hey, Bob.
You
should say something. Look, this fucking 21-year-old guy out-talked all of you. Now, he's in the middle of the war. He's a veteran, just came home from it, you know, the high school war. Granted, he has more to say than you guys. You got direct experience, but you should be reminded of yourself there. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, all I have to contribute tonight is I finished reading the book, How the Hippies Saved Physics, and I thought that put a new aspect on what you were talking about with ion.
Well, let me give you some background to that. I want to see – I know the book. A big factor in that is Jack Sarfatti, right?
Sure.
Yeah, Jack Sarfatti.
There's
a lot
of names. There's a lot of names to remember in that
book. Right, but Jack is one of the main guys of the new physics and all that. And the word physics is in the title, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so this book, it goes back to the Stuart Brand gang in the Whole Earth Catalog people in the 60s, right? And these guys started the home computer movement because they were part of the Ken Kesey, LSD, Tim Leary world, the counterculture, the Walter Bowert world, and they sort of didn't like what happened with LSD, so they said maybe computers could do it. Now, what's interesting, go read Tim Leary's flashbacks book and read how he learned about computers as an alternative to acid from McLuhan. You'll end up – McLuhan's the hidden ground. And I bet you the guy who wrote that book has nothing real about McLuhan. He might mention Global Village or something, but McLuhan's a factor in here because McLuhan told Leary that you will your acid and drug taking will take off and be a mass phenomenon as people use computers more and more. And that's actually what happened. So then you have these guys like Stuart Brand and this early Silicon Valley people. They get and they start making computers. And then Jack Sarfatti gets in there, and he's an advanced, smart physicist, and he starts seeing, well, consciousness is changing. So he starts thinking up different kinds of physics, and there's a whole bunch of them in there. And this whole gang I found in 1999. I went out and visited Walter Bowert, and that's when I interviewed Peggy Mellon Hitchcock, and she was the one of providing the venue for LSD at Millbrook, her family, she and her brother. So Walter, one day, while I was out there in May 99, said, look at this, Bob. And he showed me his incoming email. And there was Jack Sarfatti this, Jack Sarfatti that. I said, who's that guy? And he says, no, he's very interesting. I think I'll try to get you on his list. So within a few weeks, I got on the list. And I started reading what Jack was saying. And I said something about McLuhan. And Jack immediately goes, wait a minute. You know Mary McLuhan? And I said, yes. And he says, well, I had the hots for her in 1995 here in San Francisco. Her office was right next to my office, blah, blah, blah. So we really bonded on the McLuhan thing. But he, Jack, didn't know any McLuhan knowledge. He just knew Mary. So I got in there, and I started sending in my physics formulas based on Bob knowledge, which never got very far. Jack didn't understand them, didn't agree with them. But eventually we met. And some couple taped us, but they never – I don't know what they did with the broadcast on a Connecticut TV show. But me and Jack hit it off, and then in person, and then he wanted me to consult with these well-off Saudis who were going to fund Jack and try to build a new cold fusion thing, a new energy device. So one thing led to another, and then ION showed up and interrupted it. And then I met with Jack in 2013 with Will, who was supposed to come in today to talk about Twin Peaks. And someone predicted, Chad predicted he won't come in and he won't make it. And anyways, we met with Jack in March 2013, and I told him all that we had done, and he wouldn't believe me. And he said, I will test it, Bob, if you give me $1 million. So that's where those hippies ended up. Talking to me and demanding $1 million to check out something that we didn't care what his opinion was because we knew it worked. But that story, Ben, I've got a lot of background to tell you about anybody you bring up in that story. It's an important book if you want to get a lot of Bob knowledge about all those people. Did you know that when you read the book? Did you figure out – did you know I knew Jack Sarfatti?
I saw you made a post about it and you recommended reading it, so then I got it and I read through it pretty quickly. And I thought it was pretty interesting to see how physics was developing. And, you know, when I took physics class in university, a lot of it was just problem solving, which they talk about in the book, and didn't do a lot of theorizing. But when I was doing my philosophy degree, you know, that's what we spent a lot of time talking about. So I thought the book was really awesome, and it took me to a deeper understanding of, like, I guess what –
Well, how we got here.
In reality. Exactly.
Your school doesn't teach you that background.
No.
Yeah, no, it's an important story.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was very helpful.
For sure. Yeah, give the people the title clearly. What is the title?
It's called How the Hippies Saved Physics by David Kayser. Science, Counterculture, and the Quantum Revival.
What's the subtitle?
K-A-I-S-E-R.
Kayser, K-A-I-S-E-R. That's usually pronounced Kayser. David Kayser. And what was the subtitle?
Science, Counterculture, and the Quantum Revival.
Right. All the time that, you know, Reaganism or neoconservatives was putting down the bad orgy of the 60s, little did the neoconservatives know that those guys that were part of the orgy created the paradigm for the 90s. And the Android meme, you know, it's
Say
a
that
game.
Say title one more time, please.
Say it again.
Say the
Can
title again.
This? Right, please.
How the hippies saved physics.
Who's going to believe that? Say that to your mother. The hippies saved physics. What are you fucking talking? Those dirty fucking drug addicts, they didn't save no physics. You know, that people don't know. Now, these are intellectual hippies, sort of like the real hippies, the ones who intellectually chose a counter strategy and culture and knew what they're doing, not your average, you know, whack job and stone on heroin.
Right.
You know, these are literate hippies, you could say.
Right, which is what I enjoyed about it, is the academic background. And I guess that's like a visual bias, but essentially it makes me feel more comfortable about the scenario.
Yeah, yeah. And it's partly not true. It's the baby boomers celebrating themselves, or David Kayser, maybe he's a Generation X guy, trying to find some order in the baby boomers' intellectual world. I mean, because the more you leave out McLuhan, you don't understand why it appears to be that way. I mean, Jack Sarfatti is not accepted in academia. He gets occasionally a chance to speak on the fringe, but he's the most avant-garde physicist because he's out there every day, up till recently, allowing anybody basically engage on his chat line while he posts his formulas, which nobody understood. But I have a lot of I have copies of what went on 99 to 2005. I should post some of that. The arguments Jack would have, or what other people would say. There was a real battle between journalists and physicists. Brian Greene, he's the famous guy for string theory, does the TV shows. He was on all the top physicists that I knew about were in there on it. But they didn't take Jack seriously. If Jack was the only one who had time to entertain everybody digitally in the chip party, while Brian Greene and them were making books and TV shows to become, semi-wealthy. But Jack had funding all along. He has a private backer. So he has time to play and engage amateurs. And he's probably not even featured very prominently. He's part of the book, but he's not the main guy. Who's the main guy in that book? The main physicist, a hippie physicist.
Then Seurig is one of them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Saul Paul Seurig, you need to buy Jack's books where he talks about the xenochrony that happened to him and Saul Paul and Fred Wolf. Fred Wolf was well known in the New Age world. He's the guy behind the movie What the Bleep Did Something Happen? You know that movie? What the Bleep Happened or What the Fuck? And yet you say the word bleep. So Fred is that. Saul Paul Seurig is more accepted academically, and Jack inspired both of them, and Jack's the wild card of the situation. But it's those three, and their story is pretty amazing. They go to Paris in 73, and they encounter weird ghosts, and then they go to different physics labs, and then they get involved with Uri Geller, and the cult that James Martinez was part of, the Arthur Young cult. It's an incredible intertwined story, and he has books out, you know, big picture biographs, easy to read. First one, Space Time Beyond, and then he's got a new one. I forget what it's called. I have them. That's the next thing to read. Read how Frank, what this Kaiser almost doesn't understand who these guys were. And but I haven't read the book, so I don't know how. What is it? What do they say about Saul Paul Sarag? They talk about his trip to Paris and all that crazy stuff they got into.
With the like human development group of people.
Yeah,
into that.
Yeah, the EST, Werner Erhard. They get into that part?
Yeah.
Okay.
They go over that, the Erhard seminar trainings.
Yep.
For runners.
Well, you know, the whole meme.
And personal growth.
The meme of Back to the Future, and the actual movie has a character based on Jack Trafatti, the wild scientist. But what happened is that Werner Erhard met Jack accidentally around 1975, and he was just peaking as the new guy out of Esalen Institute with the seminars on EST, and it was starting to spread. So Werner had money. So he invited Jack to come and do a lecture series at Esalen, or somewhere around there near San Francisco, or up in Big Sur. So Jack gave the lecture, maybe it was a series. Who was in the audience? Robert Anton Wilson. That then led to his trilogy, the Illuminatus trilogy, and that he became a famous Generation X novelist. Francis Coppola's sister, wife, or somebody, mother, was in the audience. That's how Ford Coppola got the idea, and then it went into Hollywood, and then they got to the Back to the Future stuff. It came from Jack's seminar, sponsored by Werner Erhard, because these key people just happened to be lucky enough to be there to attend it in 1975. Did they go into that part of it?
No, not that detail. But they do talk about some of the conferences at Big Sur.
Yeah, so that the meme of Back to the Future came out of Safadi. It's post-quantum physics, he called it. And Fred Wolf and Saul Paul Sarag and Nick Herbert. You know about Nick Herbert, that name in there?
Yes.
Yeah. And those four guys, basically, Fred's off, you know, he's got his own lecture thing. He's still friends with Jack. Saul is a balanced guy. He's friends with Jack, but Nick, he's really fallen out with Jack. And all that yelling would go on Jack's chat line. So it was very good that Bowert got me in there. So Bowert goes and visits Jack Sarfatti in somewhere around there, let's say 97. Jack Sarfatti shows up with a bodyguard who has a big gun underneath his jacket, and that was probably Kim Burafrato. So anyways, they sit on the curb, and Jack's talking to Bowert, and Bowert's interested in what the hell Jack's about, and Jack is kind of arrogant. All of a sudden, a big limousine drives up and has a beautiful blonde in it, so Jack gets in the limousine and drives off and doesn't really finish his appointment with Bowert. So Bowert didn't have a very good effect from Jack. You know, Jack was rude. But he stayed and watched the conversation, and then he put me in there, and then I became a factor in the middle of it. But one of the arguments was when David Rockefeller took advantage of Clinton's youth when he first became president, 92-93, and got the authorization to an official UFO investigation led by David Rockefeller. And much happened out of that in the mid-90s. And then this journalist got mad that all these New Age guys hijacked the David Rockefeller UFO report. You know, I guess people like Stephen Greer. And that led into a whole problem. So there was an argument between the journalist, I can't remember his name, and the guys who were on the David Rockefeller Project. And that was a whole other battle. It is really the most interesting part of the, you could say, World Wide Web number one, or what's it called? Web 1.0. What went on around those guys and Jack was really interesting. And then it got all canceled by Web 2.0 when everybody could start broadcasting their own shit and nobody cared about Jack anymore. There you go. So stay on. We can keep talking about this. What time is it?